I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. On the program today, family life in the 21st century, as you may be seeing this summer in three separate Hollywood films, sometimes includes families formed with help from a sperm donor. In our Behind Closed Doors conversation, we'll talk about how that experience is lived in real life, at least how it's been lived by our guests. But first, another modern struggle, the battle over the rights of gays and lesbians. Today, we want to talk more about the debate over whether gays and lesbians can serve openly in the military. In 1993, the policy called Don't Ask, Don't Tell first went into effect. It continues to be enforced, even though the president and other high-ranking civilian and military leaders now say they support a repeal. Indeed, Defense Secretary Robert Gates reminded service members earlier this year that the policy remains in force.
While this process plays out over time, nothing will change in terms of our current policies and practices. Current law, policies, and regulations remain in place, and we are obligated to abide by them as before.
So that means that gay service members continue to face expulsion from the service for disclosing their sexual orientation or having it disclosed by third parties. Today we talked to two people facing separation from the service under the policy. They have very different stories to tell. Here with us in our Washington, D.C. studios is Lieutenant Colonel Victor Fehrenbach. He's flown almost 90 combat missions in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Kosovo in his 19 years in the Air Force, but he's been assigned to office duty in Idaho since 2008, pending an investigation of whether he violated Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He joins me with his attorney, Drew Woodmansey. He's also here in the studio with us. And on her cell phone from the United States Military Academy at West Point, Catherine Miller. She's a cadet who resigned last week, and she must remain on campus as her request is being processed. I welcome you both. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be here. Thank you
to be here. Thanks for having us, Michelle.
Thank you for having us.
Lieutenant Colonel, I'm going to start with you. Can I just ask why you decided to join the service to begin with?
My parents were both in the Air Force. I was born on an Air Force base, grew up on an Air Force base my whole life, and so it's just always been a part of me. And obviously my parents sort of instilled that sense of service in me. It wasn't really until I got to Notre Dame, where I went to college, where I felt more strongly about the calling. Between my freshman and sophomore year, I heard a speech that Senator John McCain made, and he talked about his time as a POW in Vietnam. And after I heard that speech, it just moved me. It changed my life, actually, because my first year in ROTC, I actually didn't enjoy it that much. So I thought about dropping out of the ROTC program. But after I heard that speech, I thought that I owed John McCain and those that served with him a debt, and that the least I could do was give 4, 8, 10 years of my life to serve my country in the military. So I went back with sort of a renewed sense of service and just dedicated myself to it. And I thought, well, I'll stay as long as I enjoy it. As long as I want to continue to serve, I'll stay as long as they'll let me.
And how long have you been in?
19 years now.
19 years now. Logged some 88 combat hours. Don't have time to list all the medals and commendations on your record. Why then did the military begin investigating you in May 2008?
Mm-hmm. A civilian in Boise, where I live, which is about 45 minutes from the base, he outed me to the Air Force. So it wasn't by, you know, I never intended to do this. I've been serving for 17 years at the time. I had always kept my private life private. I never expected that Don't Ask, Don't Tell would affect me. I just, you know, thought I could continue to serve under it, and like I said, I never expected any of this.
And this is a question I wanted to ask Drew. Is the policy intended to allow third parties to out an individual?
Well, it's an important question because the new guidelines that Secretary Gates endorsed and promulgated back in March are really geared toward a more humane approach to this policy and this law. And the policy now, as it stands with the new regulations, are really more strict in terms of what is credible information and special scrutiny to third parties that have a desire to harm the service member. And so, in particular with Colonel Fehrenbach's case, that individual clearly had an intent to harm him and had a history of false reporting. So there is the possibility for third parties to out someone, but there is special scrutiny that should be given to these cases when a third party comes forward with information.
So just to be clear, Colonel, you thought you could live with the policy.
You did live
with the policy. Yep. You had no intention of...
Absolutely.
You were aware of your sexual orientation.
I would say I wasn't at the beginning. There were probably years, and I think everybody goes through this, where you're not sure. You kind of feel a certain way, but you think... I actually thought, oh, I'm going to get married when I'm 28, probably have kids when I'm 30, and just move on. But I think it takes a period of years where... you know, you start to realize.
And I need to interject here because it's important. This case that the colonel is being investigated under and being discharged for is a case about conduct, not a statement. He's never acknowledged any sexual orientation of any sort, one way or the other, publicly. And this case is geared toward a specific single act with a third party, not any statement he's made acknowledging any sexual orientation. That's important to note.
But it is important to note, and that actually brings me to Catherine's story. Catherine, let me just start with asking you the same question. Why did you decide to serve in the military, and why did you want to go to West Point?
I discovered West Point my junior year of high school, and I was immediately drawn to the holistic development that goes into each cadet. Not only, you know, at a regular college, you develop yourself academically, but I was drawn to the fact that West Point makes a deliberate effort to develop cadets, also physically and militarily, to develop leaders. And I was really drawn to that holistic development and that the evolution of a leader throughout that process. And I really want to devote my life to a cause bigger than myself, helping others, and the military was just the perfect fit just for that.
Do you mind if I ask, did you feel you had an understanding of your sexual orientation at the point at which you enrolled in the academy, or was that an understanding that came later?
I was comfortable with my sexuality also around the same time that I was discovering West Point. So it was the beginning of the process where I was becoming more open with it as part of who I am.
So you just figured you would deal with it in the same way that the colonel has? You would just, what? You just would not disclose your orientation. You wouldn't ask, you wouldn't tell. Was that pretty much your thought about it?
Absolutely. I planned on returning to the closet. However, that ended up being a much more difficult task than I had anticipated. It had taken a greater toll on me socially, mentally, and emotionally than I had ever anticipated.
In fact, I want to read a little bit from your resignation letter, because this is, I think, the point that we want to get to. You said that, I'm quoting now, "I've created a heterosexual dating history to recite to fellow cadets when they inquire. I have endured unwanted approaches by male cadets for fear of being accused as a lesbian by rejecting or reporting these events, and I've been coerced into ignoring derogatory comments toward homosexuals for fear of being alienated for my viewpoint. In short, I've lied to my classmates and compromised my integrity and my identity by adhering to existing military policy." Can you just talk a little bit about that? Would you just give me a sense of having to rebuff or having to address this whole question of advances in order to protect yourself? Can you talk a little bit about that, if you would?
Okay, so cadet life is, we're all students together, but we also go through military training. We go through pretty much everything together. So we have professional relationships within our cadet chain of command, but we also have our social relationships. And during our initial inculcation period as a cadet, it's called cadet basic training, I remember the topic of one's romantic life and personal life eventually surfaces. And I distinctly remember nicknaming my previous girlfriend, whose name is Kristen. I referred to her as Chris, and I changed all the pronouns I used from she to he. And immediately I started developing lies, and I started covering them up with stories that may or may not have happened. And just right off the bat, I was being dishonest with my friends and my fellow cadets.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's the policy that bars gay and lesbian persons from serving openly in the military. I'm joined by two people who are facing discharge under the policy, West Point Cadet Catherine Miller. She's recently resigned, and Lieutenant Colonel Victor Fehrenbach, who is a decorated combat veteran who's fighting discharge under the policy. We're also joined by Lieutenant Colonel Fehrenbach's attorney. On the question of enduring unwanted approaches by male cadets for fear of being accused as a lesbian, I'm wondering if women who are not gay feel that they have to do that. Catherine?
I think the West Point in the military has made a deliberate effort to address sexual harassment. It's been a problem in the past. However, you know, the military is definitely addressing this. However, under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, though it wasn't intended to be this way, lesbian cadets like myself are forced into an odd situation where, one, we're lying, but then also I feel defenseless against these sort of situations that happen.
What was the point at which you felt you had to resign?
I remember sitting in on a professional military ethics class, which is run by cadets, and it's meant to be an open discussion sort of experience. And somehow we got on the topic of gays in the military, so my classmates and I were talking about it. And I remember a minority of cadets that were very, very opinionated, that they did not believe homosexuality was morally right and that gays had no place in the military. I remember these derogatory comments being made and these really inhumane terms. And I know the comments weren't directly toward me, but I took them that way, that here were my friends, here were my classmates, slandering homosexuality. And I was speechless and slightly traumatized by the entire experience. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to serve in a military in which I felt so violated like that.
The question I have for you, Catherine, and it's a difficult one, and I apologize, but you sound like you're a very brave young woman. I feel like you can address this question. Is there are those who would argue that this is very little different from not liking it? I mean, that there are other people who present themselves for military service and they just don't like it, you know, for whatever reason. To those who feel that this is something that you need to know about yourself before you enter the service, that the policy's been in place, that's the deal. For those who feel that way, what would you say?
I would say my number one priority coming out of high school was to go to West Point. That was my dream. That was the be-all, end-all for me. And I wasn't about to sacrifice that for a personal aspect of my life, that being my sexuality. But like I said before, I completely underestimated the challenges I would end up facing. And ultimately, I feel like it's detrimentally affected my professional growth. I've committed myself to developing academically, physically, and militarily. However, I don't feel like I've grown as a person since I've been here. This is something that needs to surface, and I can't suppress that any longer.
We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll hear more about the effects of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy for these two service members with whom we've been speaking. And I should mention that later this week, we will hear a different perspective on the policy. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. Please stay with us.